number. We actually have a misnumbering on our system. We say we've done one more than we
have. It's like the AD calendar.
It is very echoey.
It's possible.
Yeah, no, I know for sure because we have.
How many?
We have misnumbered. Say that we have one more than we do.
Oh.
We went from 4 to 6.
Okay.
Did we really?
I'm just going to hang out over here, so whenever y'all are ready, you can just go ahead.
We'll just go over here. We'll pretend that Rusty's actually running the sound like he usually is.
Yeah, okay.
So, hello and welcome to the possibly 10th, maybe 11th, maybe 12th.
Maybe.
Welcome to the 10th, welcome to the 11th, welcome to the 12th podcast for North Fulton Drama Club. My name is Thomas Strickland, and in any order that you wish to have, yes, people are coming in. I have with me...
Nikki Strickland.
Alyssa Jackson.
Dory Turner.
And Rusty is wandering around his apartment.
His very lovely new apartment.
It's wonderful, this apartment. If you cannot tell, this is a more relaxed atmosphere. You can smell it in the air that a show is over and done.
Too bad this is not smell-o-vision.
Yeah. Much Ado About Nothing. I consider it a qualified success. Maybe
not
an unqualified success.
It's an unqualified success. We are not responsible for the weather.
That's very true. We had 5 shows instead of a regular 4.
Ironically, we got four shows.
we scheduled 5, got 4. We actually got 4.5.
Yes.
The first weekend worked out fine, as well as the matinee, the experimental matinee performance worked out great.
Except for the sweltering boys in the wool jackets.
And also...
They loved it.
It's the price you pay for fashion.
And also the realization that right about the halfway through the second half of the show, the sun is setting right at stage right. So it's if anyone's looking stage right, they're blinded.
And squinting.
And
it's really attractive.
You look concerned at all costs, which is good because I was concerned, and during the scene I was supposed to be concerned in.
It was great because we were asked every once in a while, so aren't people distracted by the weather? And, well, they're not distracted by the wind or even the occasional rain, but sunlight in your eyes, hard to hide the fact that that's being bothered.
That was actually the best part was the first night the wind was blowing so much, and all I can remember is Anna and Claire coming out there and... they're doing the gulling scene with Beatrice, and they looked like they were about to, you know, do a telecast about Here Comes a Hurricane.
they looked like those poor reporters in the gale force wind. Well, the wind's really strong, Bob.
The hair is blowing out at like a right angle to their face. And the curtains that we string sheets up basically around the porches to curtain them in, and they became sails.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was
we had to hold them together furiously backstage, or else they would blow open.
What made, of course, the second weekend was different than the first because we did not have our Dory. She had to take care of family matters, and we understand completely. Alyssa stepped in to take care of that role.
And did a wonderful job.
We did a fantastic job of handling the emergency.
We were in crisis management mode. We were planning crisis management mode before we knew that we actually had to be in crisis management mode. And we're in the middle of it, and I'm like, you know, we're good at this, but I hate it.
Yeah. It's not fun.
No. And I felt terrible having to put you guys in that position.
It's okay. It was the best possible way for that to happen. If it had been anyone else, we would have been in massive trouble.
But, yeah, it would have been a huge problem.
If something like this had to happen and we had to lose someone at the last second, like, I mean, unfortunately, it was really good that it was you.
Yes. And I played Margaret, which Margaret was more of a fixture on stage than a line giver.
Well, Margaret was important. It's just that, like...
Yeah,
the way it works out, like, it's the right size part to be able to learn it pretty quickly if you're good at learning lines.
And thankfully, Lyssa has the same endowment that I have that are important to the role. So.
It's like, there's certain things you can do with costumes, and I don't think that any of us could have fit into Claire or Anna's or Aaron's costumes.
No.
Like, it just would have been...
No, it was perfect.
We would have to make costumes.
And
we didn't have time to make costumes in 3 days.
No,
two days, really.
Yeah, it was a 2-day thing.
I was very impressed watching Nikki and Alyssa taking care of business. Because they're like, okay, we have to get her fitted in these dresses. We have to make whatever changes we have to make. Okay, try this dress on. We can do this. Okay, try the next dress on. It's done. And try the next dress on. Oh, it's Franken dress. And still, Franken dress still worked.
Franken dress still
worked. It
fine. Did. You're like, one side feels different than the other side. I'm like, that's because it is.
That dress was an experiment and fun.
Although I've seen pictures and you know the little places where you put ribbon on it or whatever, it looks really good.
It does. That was an excellent brainwave I had.
Especially from 30 feet away.
Ribbon will hide all of that mistake. I guess we haven't really talked about costumes for the show much.
We ended up keeping under wraps.
Right. We ended up manufacturing about 7 or 8 dresses for this show, which is...
I don't remember.
Anyway, but
it was 12 pieces in all.
Right, but specifically 7 dresses from scratch, and... It was a really, like, I'm really proud of us. I think the amount of sewing that we've done in past shows kind of prepped us for the major undertaking that this was. And I think we really did. I'm really, really proud of what we did.
And I learned a lot. My mom came, and Sarah, who played Constance, which in any other show would be Conrad.
Oh, yeah, we should talk about that change. Changes really quick.
Well, anyway, go ahead. Let's finish this. Keep on going. She had one costume, and it was a complex pattern anyway,
which we made more so
because we wanted it to look a certain way. And my mom came, and actually I helped her make that dress, and then my mom came and took it in, which made it perfect. If we hadn't really handed off major construction on the dress for Sarah and the dress for Darshan, who played Antonia, we would have been in trouble. But the funny thing I found out, and I don't know if I told you this yet, because, like, I think you were gone when I found this out, and I was so flabbergasted by it. Back in the day, you had the Singer Sewing Center in your town. Like, it was, everyone had a sewing machine, right? So this was something you had. It was like frickin' Sears or something. Vogue purposely imports these, like, couture patterns, these things that are, like, actually very hard to make. And you go to your Singer Sewing Center, and you take a class, and someone teaches you how to make them. So, you know, you and me here with our, I mean, admittedly, 130-plus IQ is both of us.
Right.
Trying to figure out something that, in the day, would have been taught to you by an expert in a class.
I'm shaking Nikki's hand. Well played, Strickland.
Well played on our part.
It actually would explain what happened with this one particular pattern. We found this one wedding dress pattern that looked deceptively simple. We're like, surely it was simple.
Except for the one thing.
It had these crazy ruching, gathering things you had to do on the side. And we're like, we can figure this out. We'll use this. And stupidly at the time, we're like, well, we'll make 3 wedding dresses out of this. And at the time, I was going... These are all gonna look the same. It's gonna be too similar. Yeah, good times.
And we said, oh, we'll make them look different.
We'll make them look different.
On purpose.
You'll add little touches.
Ironically, because of the fabrics we chose and the way we chose to employ the pattern, all 3 of them look like completely different. I've told people that they came from the same pattern, and they don't believe me.
Yeah, the only thing that gives away is the neckline, really.
There's a neckline and a center seam that runs down the very front of the dress. And other than that, you would never be able to know.
Especially not my dress.
Yeah.
Oh, Franken dress. It's the best dress.
It makes you look like a goddess.
It does. It was very much like... Aphrodite, queen of love.
It was the most material I've ever had on my body.
But it, like, honestly, like, on someone of your height...
It looked hot.
You looked really good.
You did look like a goddess. And the color set off your skin beautifully.
Well, you know.
And
Alyssa did a good job, but it loses something at 5...
Yeah, I was wondering how much of the hem you were going to have to cut off,
about
like, to make it fit.
8 inches. Yeah. Because I am short.
She's the good 5-6 inches shorter than I am. So I was a little concerned about
I didn't quite look as statuesque in it as Dory.
That's what you need for that dress,
Dory
actually.
Looked like an incarnation of Grace Kelly with this scarf thing we put around her neck and... Her hair done. I mean, she literally looked like Grace Kelly. You looked drop dead gorgeous. I wanted to kill you every night.
To shed some light on this, for those of you that didn't come see the show or were outside of the immediate Atlanta, Georgia area, you cannot. The 2 big secrets, because we usually have at least one thing under wraps for the show, and that's the concept. But there were two.
Yeah, have we even mentioned the concept?
The concept here was post-World War II.
Immediately post-World War II.
Because Much Ado About Nothing begins with soldiers returning home successfully from war. It provided us an expert place to make it modern, to make it relevant to our times as far as setting goes. It gave us a huge platform for fashion, huge platform for music, and it gave us a lot to play with and a lot to work with. The second thing is we changed the genders on a couple of characters. And this time, we changed the genders on characters that are larger than usual. We turned Conrad, who is one of Don John's associates.
One of the evils.
One of the evils. Conrad, because you have Don John Baraccio, who is instrumental in the shaming of Hero, and then Conrad, who is basically Don John's confidant, but nothing much else.
And usually, every time you see this play,
he's helping him dress.
Yeah, Conrad dressing Don John for dinner. It's incredibly effing creepy. And if you've seen the movie, it's whoever this kid is playing Conrad, oiling up.
And massaging.
Yeah, what is that about?
Actually, it's an older man, too. And in the movie, he's about in his 40s. And
is he really?
Yeah, it's very, and very greasy.
Yeah, that's really gross.
So we took Conrad and we made him into Constance. Kind of a local town girl who greets the now disposed or deposed Don John in his military uniform, and it makes that initial scene with the two of them amazingly. It gives it a whole new context, gives it possibly a purpose that it was never intended to have, but
it's so much more interesting.
It looks good, and it's very seductive.
I had a lot of fun with that because I got to kind of do that scene.
I got to do
the directing on that scene. And when I told them when I told the actors what our concept was for it, they were so excited. And I was like, Constance, you be as seductive and sensual in every motion that you do. And I want you to put as much sex into every line that you have. And it made it. It just brought it to this whole new level.
Without changing a single word of any line, it worked perfectly. I mean, Sarah Holton, who is new to us with this show, though she have a history with Nikki, which is very cool. And also Adam Johnson, who is also new for us as well. We had quite a few new people this time.
It was about half.
Other major role change, was turning Antonio, who is the brother to Leonardo, making him Antonia. Sister to Leonardo. We cast Darshan, who was fantastic. It gives the role a very interesting depth. It gives it a gender opposite for Leonardo to work off of.
And kind of a sort of angry, slighted matriarchal figure that gets to be mad that you've hurt her niece. And it actually, I guess we didn't really tell Daniel what was going to happen. And so when she goes up to him and she's really giving him what for, and she grabs his coat and she's going after him, it actually scared him.
Well, Daniel's scared easily anyway. Yeah. Love you, Daniel.
Daniel Roach, who played Claudio, he was Malvolio.
Who was fantastic.
He did a fantastic turn as Claudio for us here. But it's one of those things where the main scene of Leonardo and Antonio, it's two men talking out their problems, and one is actually breaking down and being what a man usually isn't, as far as
Shakespearean
time goes. But to have this conversation with a woman, with his sister, it gives it a really neat familial depth to it. It makes it stronger. And Stephen Banks on Leonardo really made that work.
Yeah. And I think what we actually ended up doing with this show and changing these gender roles is taking what is already kind of a different female approach in Shakespeare, kind of giving it this interesting feminist read.
Yeah.
Because it changes Antonia in that particular scene is now the sister who is encouraging the brother to not sit idly by and just let this go, but to confront their enemies and make them pay for what they've done. And it brings this whole new level to it. And then turning Constance into a force for an interesting evil character, but not in a Lady M kind of way, or, you know, but it I don't know, it was just really, I think we had a really cool, and especially because we included a scene that is cut in the film, and I don't know if how people treat it when they do the play itself.
Is that the rubato scene?
The rubato scene. There's a scene when Hero is in her wedding dress, and she's talking to her gentlewoman, Margaret, about...
And Ursula.
And, well, but no, it's in yeah, that it's first mostly, part, it's mostly that specific scene, and Margaret is basically confronting Hero about, you know, it's okay to be a sexual person and be interested in love and exploring that side of yourself. You don't have to be a prude.
And also your dress is ugly. You need another one.
Right.
That was mostly the thrust of the beginning of that scene.
But it's a
your dress, it's out of fashion.
It's a great scene, and it's a great scene that's not often, I don't think, given enough credit, because it's a really interesting read.
Well, because that's the other problem with this show. And so often you see the show cast with Benedict and Beatrice very strong, and everyone else just, you know, is whoever showed up.
And that scene becomes not so much the discussion with Hero and Margaret, the emphasis on that scene becomes Beatrice coming in and doing the "I am sick, my nose is stuffed," and it becomes a totally played for comedic value, not for anything else than that. And we had a fantastic Beatrice and Benedict in the show, but they worked with the ensemble. They weren't the focus of the show.
They were fantastic within a fantastic cast. Yeah. Right. Everyone was strong.
Everyone was strong.
And that gets back to what we really believe about casting a strong ensemble. Someone was like, well, do you just cast people you know? This is someone asking me this over email. And I was like, no, we pretty much just kind of cast the people that seem like they're going to make a good group. That's going to be the strongest group for the script.
Do we have people that repeat from show to show?
Yes.
We do, because they come to audition and they fit the role that we need.
And some people get better every time.
Sean Anderson.
Oh my gosh.
Who
had never acted
before.
You want
to think that he was
Lost.
Lying a year ago.
Yeah.
Because he told us a year ago that he had not acted since the third grade. But since he did Love's Labors with us, he also has done a couple of other shows with other companies. And he was our Baraccio in this, which again, Baraccio, one of the evils, typically kind of a throwaway comedic role. But Sean just, he stepped on stage for his scene, picked up the scenery, and started gnawing on it.
He stole every scene he was in this show.
Well, that's, you know, I'm fine with that, because I feel like that just proves our point that it doesn't have to be, there are no throwaway parts in Shakespeare.
Yeah. Well, I love what you've done between these two shows, too, because for the two shows that we've cast you in, we've given you similar roles.
Right.
I mean, even in name, which is kind of ironic.
Right.
Like the witty, interesting, sexual gentlewoman roles. But Maria and Margaret, as you played them, completely different. And
very
I think
different.
That is awesome. Like, that is a really hard thing to do, but I think you did a really great job with it.
At first, it definitely felt very much like I was playing Maria from Twelfth Night again. But then as the play went on and everybody was developing their own little things with their characters, the differences between the characters became very obvious, which was nice.
Well, and you know, purposely wanted to make them different.
Oh, yeah. I worked really
says
hard
a lot that. For you as an actress. You know,
came
up and asked us, what can I do to
everyone
make this
that.
Different?
Yeah,
many
did.
People did, you know. I mean, blocking is pretty much one thing, and scene development is another thing, but I've had several people either check with me before they did something or ask for actual character direction on their character, which is different and unique for this show. It made me feel good as a director to know that I was trusted to do that.
Well, people took us at our word this time. Like, when we say, we're pretty much going to let you go, but if you need something, or if you need something, come to us. If we feel like something is really out of line, we'll let you know. That was actually probably the highest compliment we got, as far as I'm concerned, was number one, the audience on the last night when it was trying to ring us out, being all, like, insanity and wanting us to go through, like, no matter what.
Yeah, there were people actually coming up and saying, don't stop the show. We want to see it. Do not cancel. We will stay.
Right, but then, like, after that, Stephen told me that he pretty much can't imagine the play without Constance and Antonia.
He
feels like he has to have those roles as female now, that just, it makes so much more sense.
I liked having Antonia in the play because it gave this nice matron role, this older woman role, because there are a lot of younger women in this play. Mm-hmm. Everybody's in, I'd say, in their 20s. Well, I'm here, it's probably a little bit younger than
right.
that. But, you know, and it, so it gives this nice sort of older, wiser woman who just sort of sits there very calmly and says wise things and then goes after Claudio, you know, like pretty much with a bat. So I really liked that aspect. Having that sort of older woman energy on stage was really nice.
And that's really what we wanted. I can't speak for anyone else. It seems to me we all felt that it was important to have that making that change would bring something important to the show. Because, again, Antonio is typically a throwaway role where an old man with a cane goes after Claudio, and that's kind of...
Again, plays for comedy's sake.
There's a better way to do that. There's a way to do that that takes more work.
I also liked in this show that people who, at least in Twelfth Night, didn't play necessarily funny roles like Sean and David Morgan mm-hmm. got to be hilarious. And they both were so funny in their roles. Sean is naturally just one of the funniest people I have ever met.
He kills me.
He described the Starbucks espresso machine. It took him like 15 minutes. First of all, it was not boring. And second of all, it was the funniest thing I've ever heard, just his description of the machine. So he can make anything funny, but he really got to be funny as Baraccio. And then David just completely rocked his role. I mean, he was so great as Burgess.
I was so pleased to find his pants.
He wore the oldest costume in the show.
We decided that for his character, that because it's in the script that Burgess is Dogberry's sidekick.
Yes.
And in the script, he's an old man. So we were like, well, if we're setting this show in World War II era, he is probably a throwback from World War I. So we need to find him, like this is the pieces of his uniform that he's managed to hold on to through the years.
Or that he can still fit into, right? Survived.
And Thomas went to work. I mean, Thomas did a lion's share of costume work in the show for the details for the men's costumes.
I have learned so much about World War II reenactors. They do exist, first of all.
We're not sure what they do.
And apparently they reenact D-Day, I'm told.
Yes.
I don't know how the resources that they have. But there you have it.
At least they reenact a war that was won, as opposed to the Confederate soldiers.
Right.
I'm just saying.
But there are certain things that, certain facts that came into play, like young men coming into World War II were much smaller than your average, ordinary, modern American man.
Yeah, my mother has my grandfather's uniform. My grandfather was 6 feet tall and drank raw eggs every day so that he could have some weight on his bones, and his military uniform is a 34 regular in
that's,
the
that's
jacket.
In the chest, jacket. Not 34 pants, 34 around the chest.
That's really small.
It's very tiny, very wee.
Smaller than you, Adam.
Yay.
Yeah, it's, Adam, the smallest guy in our show, wears 36.
Smallness is in...
That's snug.
Narrow. And so it became quite obvious that I wasn't going to be able to find actual vintage uniforms for our boys.
The jackets worked out.
Worked out fine. We managed to find Ike jackets. Ike jacket, wool jacket, designed or redesigned by General Eisenhower. Look it up, Wikipedia. But the actual uniforms themselves... I came on running into a brick wall made of eBay. And it turns out, after making a good phone call to a Army-Navy surplus store in Texas, said, so are you guys ever going to have any World War II-era uniform shirts? It's like, no, I'm afraid not. But I'll tell you what. The reenactors, they use Dickies. Dickies? Yes. Turns out Dickies hasn't changed their design since 1920. The exact same kind of shirt.
Yay, for
available
consistency.
At Walmart's. And it was all, became it. So our boys were all dressed in head to toe khaki Dickies, and they looked perfect.
They looked gorgeous.
Khaki Dickies with the appropriate khaki tie.
It actually looks quite hot.
They looked gorgeous.
There's something about a man in uniform.
It's true.
Especially the World War II uniforms.
Yeah, they looked hot.
But
well, because they were flyboys, yeah.
Yes, David Morgan. we managed actually to find him vintage 90-year-old pants.
Yeah, 90-year-old buttons.
And 90-year-old... matchstick.
Yeah.
In the pocket.
That's right. I forgot when he found the matchstick.
And it said, like, 1918 1st Battalion was written in the waistband of those pants.
Which is unbelievable.
And these aren't just pants. These are jodhpurs. These are, like, bloomer-type
like pants. What you see people, kind of similar to riding pants today.
Yeah, yeah.
Big and balloony around the thigh, tapered to the calf.
Such that you have to lace them.
Laced up with string. And we ended up lacing up only one leg because the laces the other leg ended up falling out in our house. And I found it later on that day in a corner because the cats had grabbed it and playing with it. And I try not to think too much about our cats. We're playing with 90-year-old string that probably has been through the battle of the Somme. But
Flanders Field
is in that string.
Buster Gas.
Yeah, I mean, military uniform dressing is really hard. But until you realize what you're doing, and then it's still hard. But they looked great.
They really looked awesome. This was a great looking show. It was really.
I almost had a heart attack the first time they all came out in their uniforms. Like the glee that filled my heart. Like I almost passed out. They looked so perfect.
That's the best part about opening night. Actually, is we spend as much time as we can, like just looking at stuff, and we're all like freaking out because it's like.
Daniel loved his jacket.
Cool. Yeah,
he bought his jacket.
Matt looked fantastic in his jacket. I mean, Matt Pavlak. Was a rock for this show. He was our
I
Benedict.
Claim him. And he was my friend.
he's Alyssa's friend.
He's my childhood friend.
has actor training already?
Yes, he has been acting for a very long time, as long as me, because that's actually how we met, was doing children's theater when we were in high school. But he had never done Shakespeare before, and he was terrified.
A lot of people were terrified.
So he learned his lines first and made us all look really bad.
Yeah. That boy was crazy. I mean, he had
a ridiculous
because Benedict has another one of these male, you know, lead characters who just talks all the time and at great length.
He never shuts up.
He never shuts up. But his speeches, I mean, it was never boring listening to him. You know, he put so much life and energy and, oh my God. I mean, I was
so
crying
funny.
From laughing. He was so funny.
He
got it. I mean, he knew what those speeches were about and how to inflect. I mean, we did have to control him. He has a tendency to do comedy leg as he likes to exit on and off stage.
We had to let him know
stage.
Which scenes were comedy leg approved and which were not.
Which were denied.
Yeah.
talking about the funny, Zip Rampy, who I brought for... We were finally able to put Zip Rampy into one of our roles, and that boy... very funny.
Oh my God, so funny.
So funny.
Funny and in real life.
Incredibly professional. And C, tell him he's a prince, and he's a dead sexy boy. So
it's true. He's a bigger guy, and one who's probably... would be routinely typecast if you were gonna, like, you know... cast people by their looks in a comedy role, and we were considering him. You know, he could have played Dogberry, no problem. But one of the things that we kind of pride ourselves on is would be challenging people, giving them something that will make them stretch and maybe give them a new approach on themselves and as an actor.
Challenging
and,
people, purposely or accidentally.
Right. And we all were like, he would be an awesome prince. Let's see what he can do with this. And he... owned it. He was fantastic. He brought more character. He's one of those actors, you can look at him at any moment that he is on stage, and he is in that scene, he has interesting business, it's amazing.
And his face,
facial
expressions alone were just hilarious.
I'm so impressed by that, because that's one of the things as an actor that I have problems with. I find it very hard to... Especially when you're just set dressing, essentially, when you're just sort of standing there, it's very hard to be actively listening and engaged and make it look interesting.
Well, and not listening to it as if you're an audience member,
right?
Which is
the
hardest thing, because you have the other problem of listening for your cue. You're like, has he said the thing yet? I have to get off stage. Like, that's very difficult. But I have no idea how long we've been talking. Probably for a while.
I don't know. We love this cast. It was very, very.
We could say gush about every single person.
Yeah,
this
I mean,
cast.
Claire
such a great
has been in all three of our shows, and she's gotten a different, more interesting, more complex role in every show, and she's grown so much as an actress in the last year, and I'm just so excited to see like where she can go next. I mean, we could talk about everyone.
We were able to put her sister in the show,
which was adorable,
ridiculous. And the watch was ridiculously cute.
They were the little dolls of the show, and
the perfect
match.
Ogden
was our Dogberry, and the audience every night.
Hilarious.
Loved Dogberry.
Yeah,
but at least Dogberry in the show was not like an oaf who drooled on himself, which is honestly the way I've seen Dogberry the last two times I can remember. So when he's not an oaf who drools on himself, he's forgettable. At least we didn't quite go that direction with this character.
No, Ron was
thank God. Our graduating senior Anna, who's been in three of our shows, and she's such a trooper, and just
she cracks me up so much. She's like, you give me roles that are different at school. They cast me as the mean old woman. And I was like, and y'all cast me as the cute girl with stuff to do. And I was like, well,
you're the cute girl.
You know, Anna, you deserve some variety. You know, like we don't really have a lot of crony old lady roles for you. I can probably dig one up if you want.
And our Beatrice, we can't forget.
No, Erin was amazing
and fighting. Because, you know, rehearsing outside, you have the problem in the middle of March and
God
April.
Bless her. God bless her.
Lord. I mean, I thought I had allergies that were bad.
No, hers were like debilitating. And Patrick with his little singing role we gave him.
We gave him a song. You know, there's a song like there are in many,
many Shakespeare.
Well,
it's the Hey Nonny Nonny song.
Right.
That is probably the most familiar as far as not the tune,
lyrics.
But the lyrics go.
Sign of More Ladies, Sign of More.
And he, you know, I found this.
We're like, you can sing.
I found this old early 70s CD of Dick Hyman, the piano player. I've taken these sonnets and I've set them to music and I have a lady singing them. Check them out. And it turned out to be just perfect. And I let him borrow it, which I need to get back from him. And
Patrick, bring that back.
Bring that back, Patrick. And he took it, learned it. And he did it.
And he got applause every night.
Not a note of mine that's worth the note.
Why, these are very crochets, I think. Notes! Notes, forsooth! And nothing.
Sign no lady, sign no more. Men were the fever never. One foot in sea and one on shore. One thing constant never. Then sign up so. But let them go. And be you blind and body, converting all your sounds of woe into pain. Nani, nani.
Even during dress, we just applauded for him. He was so great because he got into it. He closed his eyes, he reared back, he snapped. I mean, it was just. You know, Patrick is this fairly withheld kind of. I mean, he makes jokes, but he's a fairly quiet, withheld guy. But.
Other than when he's being funny, yeah.
Right, but he just let it go. I mean, he just awesome. Let his guard down. It was great.
And Tom Strong did his perfect coming in and being the senior priest for our needs, and it was very, very nice. He came in and learned his line and was very, very reverent.
And I think the sexton scene was actually really funny.
He was funny as the sexton.
And I made him, like, the best prop, the little ruffly business.
The ruffle.
He put on the ruff and, like, went to town. It was awesome. A completely different character from the priest, which was great.
I gave him a basic direction of think Perry Mason. And that worked perfectly. And Stephen Banks.
We've talked about Stephen already. Stephen's awesome.
Did you miss anybody?
Well, apparently Stephen usually gets cast as like the funny guy who does funny voices. I was like, really?
And we gave him a straight character, which is our weird ESP of us.
So
yes.
I guess we would have known that if we really made a point of reading their resumes, like, uber closely,
we
but we're mostly like,
yes, we do.
We read them, but
notes.
We don't, like, study them as if we were taking
the
bar exam.
We have a lot to do on audition nights. Auditions will be coming up in
July
for our next show. What is our next show?
That's really soon.
It is. We're not mentioning it yet because we might change our mind.
Yeah. I know that these three don't take much of a break. Actually, don't take a break at all between shows, but the cast gets all sad and depressed because we're not seeing each other every day. So we're all excited when auditions come up again.
We'll have that barbecue soon.
Yay!
We'll have we're a group that needs a barbecue.
That's right. My God, a Christmas party and a barbecue. I can't take it. It's going to be so great.
We've got to get fixed soon.
And I think that's really about it.
Yeah, we can't say enough good about this cast and about this show. It was
so
awesome.
Fabulous. And I thank you guys for letting me, for welcoming me and helping me, because learning a part in 2 days and having a panic attack backstage right before I went on.
Well, you know, it's like you learn. I don't learn lines very fast. Like I can't. It's a terrible, terrible actor problem. I can't learn lines without blocking. It's because of marching band, and it's my problem. And so you learn lines faster than me. I was happy to let you do it.
So,
so yeah, so thank you everybody.
Thank
you were
everybody.
A great help.
Oh, and hey, Eileen.
Oh, Eileen Miller. Yeah, she came, she helped us do auditions, and then she got a little too pregnant. And
she was already pregnant, but she got too pregnant.
And then she had to go. And
so we have our first NFDC baby.
Yay,
so
Alex.
Yes, so welcome to the world, Alex. And
we love you.
We love you, and Eileen and Kurt. And I think goodbye to podcast world, because
goodbye,
we
podcast world.
Yeah, to go.
Goodbye, podcast.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Okay, everybody, say goodnight.
Goodnight,
everybody.
Where's the button?
We talked a long damn time.